Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're starting the show by taking a look at women in the brewing industry. Couple of guests for you. One of them, Brianna Willikett. She is the Wisconsin chapter leader for the Pink Boots Society. It's an organization that provides education and support to women and non-binary people in the alcoholic and fermented beverage industry. Bree, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
With us as well, Rob Novak. He is the Historic Brewing Experience Coordinator, which is kind of a cool title, at Old World Wisconsin in Eagle. Rob, great to have you with us as well.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having us.
So as we talk with these two, I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments. Let us know which women you look up to in the brewing industry, perhaps. If you work in brewing, who got you into the trade? Tell us what you know about the brewing history. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Bree and Rob, before we get into some brewing history, perhaps, why do you think beer plays such an important cultural role in our state? And Rob, maybe start with you and then go to Bree.
Sure. Well, we're lucky today because we can see it all around us. Like, most of our neighborhoods have a brewery or a brew pub or a bar that has a good selection of craft beer. And when you talk about craft beer, Wisconsin's unusual because our history deals a lot with the big breweries. A lot of them were based here. They started out fairly small, a lot like today's breweries. So what we see is this parallel between the beginning of our brewery history and what we're experiencing today. But they've all become places where we gather together, yeah. Families, friends, celebrations, or just after work to have a beer and chat about what happened. And that has not really changed in our tavern state in 150 years.
Yeah, I think so. Bree, what about you? What are your thoughts?
Absolutely. I agree 100% with Rob. I think it's a unique part of our culture here in Wisconsin, and other parts of the country might find it weird that people might bring their kids into a brewery or have a celebration around alcohol in such a profound way that we do, but I think it really brings people together in a great way.
I was in Florida once and with my daughter, who at that time was about 10, I guess. And we went into a bar mostly to get some food. And they said, well, you can't bring her in here. What are you thinking? And I said, well, back in Wisconsin, we can do that all of the time.
Yeah. Yep. When you travel, you really see it. And that has a lot to do with our history because we were a brewing state very early. I mean, the East Coast was brewing very early, but we were brewing right away, and it became part of our culture. Has a lot to do with the groups of people who moved here, of course, but also our temperature, our climate, all of that played a big role in that industry taking hold.
Yeah, and wheat. We can get to that in a minute. But Bree, what really got you or drew you to the brewing industry?
So the brewery I work at is Hinterland in Green Bay, and I started working there originally on the restaurant side. Yeah. So I was serving, hosting, and I was always kind of curious about that side of the brewery, and I kind of just started helping out. I asked one of our brewers, like, hey, if you guys are packaging one day, canning or bottling, I'd love to come see it, help out. So I started doing that. And then I didn't know that they were necessarily looking for somebody at the time to fill a position. So I was in the right time, right place. And I've been full-time there for a few years now, solely in the brewery. And it's been really fun.
You like it?
I do. I really like it.
Well, what about you, Rob? What got you into this?
It was sort of a happy accident. I was out in California, in San Diego, for a long time. And the craft beer scene out there is about 20, 30 years old. Older than in Wisconsin. So a lot of exposure. It's kind of part of the culture out there. There aren't any big breweries in that area that take hold. So a lot of craft beer, home brewing, obviously then happens after that. And then I was actually a theater student and a playwright in kind of my first career. Mm-hmm. So then when I moved back here, got into beer, started working at beer bars and breweries, and then ended up seeing the post at Old World for this historic brewing program, which is kind of half theater, half brewing. And it just clicked. It was like, okay, I need to do this.
Kind of like a perfect fit for you.
Yeah, really, really unusual situation where you find one of those jobs where you're like, this is something interesting.
So who brought beer brewing traditions to North America?
Well, North America would be Wisconsin specifically. You're looking at probably the French and English explorers. That's more of a Canadian UP thing. But the English certainly brought brewing to the East Coast very early. The first ships that came here had beer on them, and they're going to make beer when they get here. So that's how beer got here. In Wisconsin, you had settlers who were brewing with things like wild rice, wheat. Obviously, you have a lot of wheat. Barley's a trickier one in Wisconsin, but you can grow enough to make beer. So the Irish, eventually the Germans, they were not the first ones here. And maybe some of the French who stuck around long enough to brew while they were traveling.
Yeah, interesting. And it obviously goes way back. I was, you know, you've written a nice piece about the history of women in beer and it was interesting that it started with kind of farmers. I was reading that farmers made their own beer and then started making. Why not have a tavern?
Yeah, and I mean, there's ideas that perhaps civilizations, larger towns, larger cities started because people wanted to settle down enough to grow barley or to grow the grain they needed to make beer. Archaeologists go back and forth on how long people have been making what we would identify as beer. Hops weren't involved until, you know, just before the Middle Ages, but you can make beer with a lot of different spices. And then we have to normalize talking about women in beer because they were there at the beginning. They were making beer initially right away 10,000 years ago, and they're making beer today. So it's kind of like that has to be discussed and talked about, and that history needs and is being researched. It's just fascinating.
It's actually interesting. Women were the primary beer makers way back. I mean, they were all.
Yeah.
What happened? How'd that change?
Well, so it's a food product, right? It's a kitchen product, especially on a small scale. And then you had cottage brewing in the UK, with Ireland, Scotland, England, where they'd have a rooming house or a restaurant, and beer would be part of the menu. So the women who were cooking and running those places while their husbands were maybe out in the fields or doing their jobs, they would make beer too because it was a recipe item. What happened was industrialization of the industry. And as soon as companies started making beer and making more money off of beer, women were kind of cut out of that very, very quickly.
Oh, sure.
Yep. And then in Central Europe, they would go as far as women were making beer, obviously, without hops at that time. Well, as soon as hops sort of became a thing, Reinheitsgebot gets talked about a lot. But kind of the dark side of the Reinheitsgebot is, oh, you have to have hops in beer. Well, let's put taxes on hops. And that means that the women cottage brewers can't afford to buy the hops. They're making beer without hops, so let's make that illegal. And then that pretty much wiped out that industry in Central Europe.
What an amazing story. Well, let's zero in a bit more on Wisconsin for just a minute or two. And Bree, I promised I'll get to you here.
That's okay.
In just a minute. But when did they transition here in Wisconsin from sort of the home to the big?
It's a bit of a gray area. You're talking about before 1850, farmers brewing their own beer. And women on farms certainly would have been part of that because it would have been made in their kitchens. They were growing small amounts of all the ingredients they needed, hops, grain, whether it was barley or wheat. Yeast is a bit of a mystery, but they sourced yeast from somewhere. Once someone had it, then they could kind of recycle it. And what you saw was similar to Central Europe, where once it became industrialized, once you had these bigger breweries open, women weren't going to get hired for those jobs, and homebrewing kind of fell off. So you had this probably 1860s, 1870s, though the Belgians near Green Bay brewed on their farms into the 20th century, and there's stories of women helping brew on those farms.
The Best family, here in Wisconsin is responsible for starting several of Milwaukee's big breweries. And Maria Best and Captain Frederick Pabst.
Yeah. Yeah,
like the beer.
Yeah, the romance that sort of kicked off a bunch of breweries. What's funny about the Best family is they came over from Germany and really are responsible for a lot of these other breweries that ended up opening. And it's really the women in the family via marriage, for the most part, that are kind of tied to all these other breweries. And you just wonder about some of those stories in terms of the roles that were played in decisions and also just... you know, all the time you'd see a brewer pass away. Well, other brewers would swoop in to try to marry the widow and inherit, sort of take over the brewery. So you have like these men who are put on this pedestal and you realize like a lot of the time they inherited these breweries and consolidated them because they married the woman who essentially owned them once their husband died.
Yeah, the Miller family was a really interesting story to me as well, because Miller beer... you might not even have it if it hadn't have been for the Miller women.
Yeah, Frederick's mom and wife, mom and sister, sorry, in Germany paid for his education, his brewing education. His dad had died. They had a little bit of money, but his mom knew that he needed a job that would sustain him. So she funded his education, and then his sister helped fund his lease of a royal brewery. And without them, he might not have learned how to make beer in the first place.
Oh boy! So it's quite of and so now, how many women are involved in the brewing industry? Maybe Bree, I have a handle on that. I don't know, but
I don't have specific statistics on that. But I'm sure that we all realize the industry is very male dominated. So with that, there's a lot of women usually behind the scenes that you don't usually hear about. I'm sure when you go out to bars and go out to breweries that you see a lot of women pouring beer, maybe not necessarily mm-hmm. making beer, but I know a lot of women who are beer tenders. And so there are definitely a lot of women doing every aspect of brewing and doing all of the work. They're just not always highlighted in those stories. And so they kind of get, you know, buried under the guise.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to talking with you about the Pink Boots organization as well. But, Rob, do you have any idea of how many women are involved in the brewing industry here in the state?
Not an exact number, but it's gone up. It still pales in comparison to men, of course. And there's inroads. Pink Boots is a big part of it in terms of just letting young women know, like, you can work in this industry.
Yeah.
I think the founder of Pink Boots, she actually used to tour Miller in the 70s as a Girl Scout. And I, you know, it's like, oh, Girl Scouts touring breweries is a great idea. And some maybe still do that, but she became fascinated with the idea of brewing beer. But it's, you know, at any brewery, some breweries, it maybe 25-30% women, some it's like none. It really varies depending on the choices the breweries make. They have a responsibility to try to make that choice. And hopefully they do.
And I know you list 8 women brewers in your article on women in the brewing industry. And it was tough, I imagine, to find out a lot of information about them.
Yeah, that was the challenge. We wanted to do an article about diversity in brewing history, and there really isn't any. So then I started noticing these mentions of women, especially the frontier breweries, so pre-1860, husband and wife teams. There'd just be these small mentions. And I started to compile them and realize, like, there are stories here that we may never find. But the ones that we could find, Johanna Heilemann's a big one. That's a little bit later. But the ones we did find had enough to them where it was like, there's big roles played here in these small cottage breweries.
Well, Octavia Van Dyke, I guess, is an iconic figure in the today. Who is she?
Octavia was... probably, in my research, the only woman who had a brewery named after her in Wisconsin in the 1800s. And it was through Pink Boots that I even learned about her, because they brewed a beer to honor her. They had a brewery in Green Bay. Her husband passed away. Before he passed away, he named the brewery after her, I think to encourage her to run it, or maybe that was like a gift, or maybe they talked about it. And then her sons went off to learn different parts of it while she stayed at the brewery and ran it for a decent amount of time. She had a lot of other businesses too. Her obituary is so packed that I think it doesn't even mention the brewery, or it barely mentions it. Because the Belgians up in the Green Bay, now they were Belgian, but they were brewing German beer, which is interesting. The Belgians up there had these communities that, you know, churches and businesses and all these things. It was very, very, very neat.
Yeah. Yeah, really interesting. Well, we're going to learn maybe a little more about Octavia Van Dyke, but I also want to talk about the Pink Boots organization as well, and we will get to that. And you can join in. I'm sorry I got carried away with the conversation here. It didn't give the number again, so let me do it right now. Questions or comments for our guest today, you can join in. The number to call is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Claire Neipert's our producer today, Trina LaSousa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for being with us today on the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at women in the brewing industry today. We've gotten quite a bit into the history of women in brewing, but with our guest Rob Novak, who's the Historic Brewing Experience Coordinator at Old World Wisconsin in Eagle. But I also want to talk with a woman who's doing brewing right now, Brianna Willikett. Bree is the Wisconsin chapter leader in the for the Pink Boots Society. Questions for the two of them as we move along today. Hope you'll join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Joe in Chippewa Falls emailed. He says he loves craft beer, searching for any new breweries, not just in this state, but anywhere. He's got this small book online called 2024 Real Craft Pass. It has quite a few smaller breweries around Wisconsin. It's a great way to find more places to check out and especially try new craft beers. You familiar with that particular book, Bree?
I think there's a lot of like hop passports and beer passes like that, where you buy a book for the year and it lists a bunch of breweries around the state or the area. And so it's really cool because you can see a book of a bunch of breweries around you. You can go travel to different ones, and usually there's some type of discount or buy one, get one for a beer from that place that you visit.
Yeah. By the way, tell us about your brewery you mentioned.
Yeah, I brew, I work at Hinterland in Green Bay, so it's right next to Lambeau, so it's very, very busy. Yeah, it gets very busy, but busy is good for business. So I've been there for a few years now, originally starting front of house and now in the brewery, but it's been a lot of fun, and our team currently on the brewery side is 3 men, 3 women. Which is incredible to have a 50-50 split, because that's very uncommon. Yeah. So,
and what are your most most popular, or which beers do you like like yourself the best?
I think our staples, our lightest beer that we have on year round is our Packerland Pilsner, and it's a solid beer, has a solid name, so people who come through definitely want to try that Packerland beer. Also, our cherry wheat we have year-round now. That's with Door County Cherries, also very popular. My favorite beer that we have, it's not on year-round, but it's called Space Breakfast, and that one is, it's on nitro, so it's creamy. It's got orange, lactose, vanilla. It's kind of like an orange creamsicle. That one's my favorite.
You should have brought along a little of that for me to sample and just.
I don't have any myself. I'm sorry, I drank it all.
Well, you mentioned the cherry beer with cherry in it, and Kelly and Washburn emailed, and she's always been curious about fruit beers, and how they get that taste. Can you comment? I get to ask both of you that, but go ahead, Bree, first.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it depends what fruit, because you could add a bunch of different fruits into something and have it be great, or have it not be. But I think it really depends. It's such a broad category that if you want something particular, maybe you do really like cherries and maybe a cherry beer would be great for you. But I don't know. It kind of depends on what fruit you're using and what style of beer you're making and if it matches well and if it's of your taste.
You just get the cherries. Just get in your case, the cherries just get thrown into the. How does that work?
For that beer, we don't throw the cherries in on the brew process. It's when after it's been in a fermenter, we have pretty much a wheat based beer that we then add cherries into. So some breweries will add fruit or things on the brew deck, like maybe they'll throw an orange peel or something like that. But that particular beer we added in after the brewing process and more later into the process.
Rob, comments from you on this?
Yeah, fruit beer is, in Wisconsin we have a lot of fruit here. And it really depends on if you're doing a standard beer like a wheat beer or if you're doing a sour, like a Belgian sour. Most of us know Belgian Red from New Glarus. And that goes through a secondary fermentation on cherries where you're using the yeast that's on the cherry to spontaneously ferment to make the beer sour. So you have this kind of white. The Belgians are really to blame for fruit beer, whether you love it or you don't like it. They have a whole tradition of fruited beers. But yeah, now you see a lot of creativity. You're starting to see you've seen fruited IPAs, heavily fruited sours that taste almost soda-like. Which can be really satisfying.
In fact, I think I've still have three models from New Glarus of that, beer that you just talked about in my refrigerator as we speak. So that's kind of cool. Well, let's go back to one more thing on farmhouse ale. Alvin emailed us. He believes that farmhouse ale is one of the beers that people made early on. What is farmhouse ale, and why is it, and is it easy to make? Why is it easy to make?
Well, it's kind of got two definitions, and Bree can jump in on the modern definition. Historically, a farmhouse ale was just an ale brewed on a farmhouse. They had way less control over their yeast. They might not have understood what yeast was before the 1860s. So ale yeast is different than lager yeast. Lager yeast wasn't really here yet and needed special circumstances to brew with. So they were all ales. And then if you brewed it on a farmhouse, you'd call it a farmhouse. Now today, it's basically a specific strain of Saison yeast or Belgian yeast that gives it a flavor that's got all these esters and phenols that are sometimes clovey, sometimes peppery.
Bree, you're the, as we've been talking about here, you're the Wisconsin chapter office or leader, chapter leader, I think we should say, for the Pink Boots Society. Tell us about your organization.
Yeah, absolutely. Pink Boots Society is an international nonprofit organization. They aspire to bring women and non-binary individuals in the industry together, help educate them to further their careers. So it's really cool. There's chapters all throughout the U.S. and then also in different countries internationally. Some chapters, like the Wisconsin chapter, it's the entire state, but some bigger states or bigger communities will have their own individual chapters. So we try to host events and do educational scholarships as well to help women and non-binary people in the industry get more education and further their careers and continue growing.
And you brew lots of really, really tasty collaborations.
Yeah, that's the other fun thing about Pink Boots is every year there's a Pink Boots hop blend. And if you purchase that Pink Boots hop blend and brew a collaboration beer with that, usually there's an event associated with it. But it's kind of whatever beer, whatever style you want to make, you just use that hop blend. And the idea is that those profits from that beer go back into the organization.
I think it's Pink Boots is kind of interesting because it's kind of like an acronym in a way, because you've got sort of a charge or in every letter of Pink Boots. I'm trying to remember them. P is for passion. I remember that.
Yeah, it's a lot of letters and a lot of words to remember, but it definitely is an acronym.
Oh, Yeah, networking, there was knowledge involved, there was beer, of course, and brewing, but there's also opportunity and open exchange of ideas.
Yeah, I think it's really cool that Pink Boots brings so many people together and opens doors for people, because you might not always know where to look for support in beer, and you might feel like you're the only female in your brewery or in your area. And so having an organization like that brings everybody together and helps lift them up and give them a voice and give them support is incredible.
Yeah. A listener called, didn't stay with us, but mentioned there used to be a show on TV called Laverne and Shirley. Bree, you're not old enough to...
No, I don't think I am, but I've heard references to that before.
They two women who worked at a beer factory. You probably know that one, Rob.
Yeah, of course, and that has history in Wisconsin as well, because, you know, even before Prohibition, bottling was often done by women and children after Prohibition too. And the main reason was because the breweries could pay them less. And there's documentation, a quarter per dollar basically is what they were making around 1910 compared to what men were making. So it has a dark side too, right? Like it's great that they were involved in packaging, but it wasn't until the 50s and 60s, the strikes that were going on to try to get fair pay. But yeah, you see pictures of women bottling, like a whole room full of women bottling at Pabst in maybe the late 30s. And that's the reason, it's because they could pay them less.
Mm. So, Bree, have you seen, you've done this for how many years? Been involved in this for seven years?
Yeah, I've been full time in the brewery for about 2.5.
Yeah. So, it sounds to me like at your brewery, diversity, there's plenty of diversity.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, especially for Wisconsin, especially for our area, there are our owners there do a very good job of diversity and inclusion in their hiring practices and in the staff there. So that's incredible, but unfortunately not all businesses are like that. Not everybody makes an effort to get their staff to look like that. So there's always improvements that can be made.
Yeah. So how does Pink Boots help in that fashion?
Pink Boots is a really great resource for me to find other minorities in the industry. And so it's really nice to be able to collaborate with other people and understand their story and how they got into it and how they themselves have overcome struggles or how they have brought other people into the industry.
So what's the biggest roadblock to women, minorities getting into the, is it, I suppose it's, there's probably not just one thing.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of factors that can contribute to it. I think what Pink Boots does with trying to provide educational opportunities to women and non-binary people is awesome, because that's one of the biggest things that's hard to do, is find that education, find a way, a resource to gain more knowledge, and just kind of getting a little bit of a head start if you can, getting into it any way that you can.
Wendy in Egg Harbor shot us an email. Could you, Bree, just go through one of your typical days? Wendy is thinking about doing this for a job, and I think may have a chance for a job in Door County, and wondering, so what's a typical day like?
Yeah, absolutely. One of my favorite things about my job is that every day is a little different. So something I might do is come in at 7 in the morning, start the bottling machines up, get everything ready for that day. The rest of the team comes in usually around 8. By then I should have the bottler mostly cleaned and set and ready to go. Then we might bottle for hours. We might then have to build an order and so pull beer from the cooler to be shipped out to our distributors. A lot of cleaning goes into brewing. So there's always a lot of cleaning upon startup and finishing with your tasks. So that might be a day, or there might be a day where we're running back and forth to the warehouse grabbing packaging. So I like, one of my favorite things to do at work is to drive the box truck, because I just feel amazing just driving that big truck. So that's one of my favorite things to do. Otherwise, it could be kegging, it could be brewing, it could be a mix of things. So there's no one set day, one set schedule that's going to be consistent, but that's what I love about it.
And then you get to interact with clients, customers, and so forth?
I definitely do a lot of interacting with my team. I think my team is a lot of fun. On the weekends, we do brewery tours, and so that's always fun, getting people in with fresh questions and just wanting to know how everything works, and having maybe some knowledge, maybe no knowledge, and being able to educate them a bit about what we do. So that's also very fulfilling.
Ned emailed. He's familiar. We're getting lots of emails here. I don't know what about our phones. I wonder if they're working. And Ned emailed us. He's a little familiar with the brewing process, but wants to know more about making sour beer. You need to sour wort. Could you go? Are there different methods, and maybe what you prefer?
Yeah, there's a couple different ways to do that. One way would be to make the wort, like actually brew wort to make beer, and then let it sour. So that's kind of the same idea as if you leave out milk and you let it sour. So I'm assuming, Rob, that's something that you've also experimented with.
Yeah, I mean, unintentionally, because the Germans were not making sour beer. But at Old World, we're brewing in the summer. It's hot, and we have a cool ship. So the wort goes in the cool ship. That's where it cools. And that anything can get in there. It's open to the air. So bacteria is a big one. Lactobacillus is a big one for souring. Acetobacter, which you kind of don't want. That's your malt vinegar kind of flavor. Those can get in there. Or you do it on purpose in the fermenter, where you add a blend of bacteria and yeast. There's some wild yeast, too. That's more of a Belgian tradition. The Germans would have dumped a batch of beer that got sour.
So what, here's another question from a listener. What tools or resources do you need to get into the business?
I think you need a resume and a phone, and you get out there and you call people and you apply. I don't know. I think there's a lot of breweries that are just willing to teach you and willing to take you in and teach you the whole process. Obviously, some places might want you to have experience or have some sort of schooling. But if you start talking to people and make connections through beer, it's not easy, but it's definitely possible to get into the industry that way.
Yeah, and Deb Carey's advice, which is great for any industry, is you start at the bottom, and you learn it to see if you actually want to do it. And in brewing, there's so many things that you can do that'll tell you, you know, within a year, like, okay, this is what this is actually about. Cleaning's the big one. Mm-hmm. And that's just a piece of advice that she puts out there to everybody in any career.
Yeah, and just to mention, probably among influential women, perhaps, in the brewing industry, Deb Carey would have to, she is president and chief executive officer of a Nuclearis Brewing Company.
Yeah,
she and her husband.
she's the president. She founded it. He's her employee. We're fortunate to have Nuclearis here and have Deb as a role model in terms of how you can operate a craft brewery. She happens to be a woman, and they're celebrating 31 years now. Pretty amazing.
Yeah, I've interviewed her on the show, and is a remarkable person and a lot of fun to talk with. You mentioned events, Bree. Are there events that are sort of public events, or are they not?
Sometimes they are, sometimes they aren't. It depends. A lot of our events through Pink Boots are for members only, because of the fact that we want to create that educational opportunity for our members. But some of the collab brew days or other events may be open to the public. There's nothing in the future that is at the moment. But if you are looking for events and stuff like that to join into, there's always events hosted at breweries, especially throughout the summer.
Yeah, and we'll get them out to Old World to brew, and that'll be public because we're open, and they come brew with us. They did the last 2 years. It's just a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. We do a rustic brew day.
So I want to make sure we get this out for people. I mean, we obviously there were some emails from people who are interested in this, perhaps wanting to know a little more about Pink Boots. What's the how do people go online to your site?
Yeah, definitely. PinkBootsSociety.org is going to be the website where you can get a bunch of information. I know the website is going to have some changes to it over the next couple months. They're updating it and refreshing it. But that's where you can visit to learn more about it, to possibly donate or become a member yourself. And then from there, you can be directed to either the Wisconsin chapter or any other chapter or resources that you might need.
So it's Pink Boots
Society.org. Yep.
Society.org. We probably have that up on our, I'm sure Claire has probably already posted it on our page, the Larry Mueller Show page. And Rob, you have, you know, you mentioned, yeah, you guys have a lot of events.
Yeah, we have events all the time. June 13th, Thursday, June 13th, we'll explore ales and lagers in Old Wisconsin. While we're open, the site's open, you'll come to the brew house, brew a little bit. We'll go out to the German farms and taste some beers. And then our festival, our midsummer festival, June 22nd, will focus on Wisconsin breweries and cheeses. And hopefully we'll have Pink Boots out there as well. And that'll be like a mini festival that's highly curated with some really unusual beers that you might have, that might have some similarities with beers that were brewed on the old farms.
So, and for there, go to Old World West. Do you need to sign up in advance for those, by the way?
Those two will be ticketed.
Yeah.
But they'll also incorporate the site itself. On any regular day, come on out when we're open, we're brewing. So the brew house will be open. I'll be in there. We'll maybe have guest brewers in there. We brew pretty much every day that we're open.
And so just go to oldworldwisconsin.org.
Yep.
.org. Or...
Or pinkbootssociety.org.
Well, I hope you'll get some clicks for that today. Thank you both so much for being with us today. It was fun learning about what's going on right now and what happened in the past when it comes to women in brewing here in Wisconsin. Appreciate it very much.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much for having
you,
us.
Rob Novak is the Historic Brewing Experience Coordinator at Old World Wisconsin in Eagle. And if you haven't been to Old World Wisconsin, my goodness, you should be anyway, getting out there. Brianna Willicott is the Wisconsin chapter leader of the Pink Boots Society. It's great to have them with us. And maybe we can do this again with them down the road. We'll see. Appreciate it very much. We're going to turn our attention to a place where I know there's some breweries in Wisconsin. Dells has, and I've sampled a few of them, but we're going to take a look at the history of Wisconsin Dells, and especially as it relates to one of the people who really got the Wisconsin Dells on the map, H.H. Bennett. Great photographer, and we'll learn some more about him, and we'll learn some more about the Wisconsin Dells next. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.